Chumash.
So we're doing Shmona Prakim, the first chapter.
And then he translated it almost perfectly, which is unbelievable.
Okay. We're learning Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters with which the Rambam introduces his explanation on Pirkei Avot. Now, the Rambam, when he was a young man, some say he was about 19, when he compiled his explanation on the Mishnah, he compiled it in Arabic with the intent that the average man could learn it, because that was the spoken language where the Rambam was at. And he wrote introductions to different tractates, and in those introductions he gave us a lot of basic yidiot, information that we need to have in order to understand that tractate, and very often in order to have a correct philosophical approach to Judaism, to Judaism in general. Now, this introduction of the Rambam's to Pirkei Avot is famous in that the Rambam over here describes why is it that we work on our traits, what the concept of Bchira Chofshit, that every person has free choice to be a better person or otherwise, and that's why we have this whole tractate that tells us how to become a better person. And we're going to see the Rambam's words himself. Now, what we're reading over here is a translation from Arabic. And you're reading a translation into English. I'm going to be reading a translation into Hebrew and translating. Da, you should know, the Rambam says. We're holding the first chapter. The nefesh ha'adam v'chochotea. Person's nefesh. And we have to define the word nefesh. It could be translated loosely as soul, but it's something else. It's not just the soul. There are different levels of life within a person. On a certain level, we're alive and animals are alive. On a certain level, we're alive and animals and plants are alive. On a certain level, there is life even in inanimate objects. Atomic life is life. The fact that the atom is moving, there are electrons, there's still life there. In Judaism, we define it that there is domem, there's the silent, the inanimate objects. There's tzomach, the ones that have action, they grow. There is chai, the live, the animal. And then there is adam, there's the human. And then there is the Jew. Now, the Rambam over here is going to be discussing the nefesh of the man. And nefesh, we're going to have to discuss which level of life is that. Is that like he's composed of atoms? Is it the fact that he has in common with growing the plants, that kind of life? Is it the life that he has in common with the animals? I don't know of anywhere that a plant is described as having a nefesh. The fact that it is, we in English call it alive, that it's growing. In Hebrew, I can't think offhand of anywhere that that's called having a nefesh. But an animal is described as having a nefesh. And therefore, we have to recognize that the term nefesh could have different levels. There's a nefesh that's described as the nefesh bahamit, the animalistic nefesh that's in a person. And we're going to see, we're going to have to decide at the end what the Rambam was referring to when he describes the nefesh ha'adam v'chochotea, the human nefesh and its strengths. Da, you should know, ki nefesh ha'adam nefesh achat. The man's nefesh is a singular nefesh. Pe'ulot rabot chalukot, and it has many tasks that are divided. Yikaru k'tzat ha'pe'ulot ha'en nefashot. Sometimes we describe those actions as though they are a separate nefesh. Ve'yichashev ba'avur zeh she'yesh la'adam nefashot rabot. And therefore we sometimes describe man as having different types of nefesh. The Rambam will explain. Kmo she'choshvim ha'rofim, just as the doctors think, ad she'patach rosh ha'rofim ve'amar, till it reached the stage that the chief doctor, meaning the whoever was the greatest doctor in those times, he began by saying shanfashot shalosh, that there are three different types of nefesh. There's tivit, the natural nefesh, chiyunit, the nefesh that gives life, v'nafshit, and the nefesh that is like a soul, spiritual. Ufamim yikaru kochot v'chalakim, and sometimes instead of calling them different nefesh in a person, we call them different strengths within a person or different segments of a person. Sometimes we say there are different portions of the nefesh. We don't say a person has three different nefesh. We said there are different components to nefesh. B'zeh Hashem yishtamshu bo ha-filosofim arbe. And the philosophers very often refer to the different parts of the nefesh. And they don't mean to say, when they describe the components of the nefesh, that the nefesh could be divided like you divide different things, that they, each one is its own entity. Rather, they're listing the different actions of the different segments of the nefesh, that together they compiled the nefesh, just as the whole is compiled, is composed of many, many parts. And the Rambam's going to expand. But what the Rambam's introducing is that when we look at a human, and this is the point the Rambam's going to expand on now, don't think that a human's eating is equivalent to an animal's eating, and that I'm like an animal. I eat, the animal eats. I'm like a plant. I grow and the animal grows. But rather, the different components within the nefesh are all a part of one nefesh. And the eating that I do is not the same as the eating that an animal does, because it stems from a nefesh that's a whole. And you can't divide the human nefesh and say, because I do actions that are similar to the animal's actions, they are the same. No, they are still a part of one whole nefesh. And the human nefesh, when it eats, is not like the animal's nefesh. Think for a second, where's the Rambam driving it? If we're going to have Mishnayot that describe how a person should eat, how a person should behave when he does physical things, why do we have Mishnayot that discuss that? Because even the physical things that I am doing in this world are supposed to reflect that they are an outgrowth of a human nefesh. I am not to sit down and eat like an animal and say, well, what's the difference? I eat, the animal eats, why shouldn't I eat like an animal? You shouldn't eat like an animal, because even your tendency to eat and your need to eat should reflect the fact that it stems from a whole nefesh, which is a human nefesh. And that's why the Rambam is beginning by stressing that even though the human can be divided, the human nefesh is a nefesh that has components that are similar, that it shares with the animals and the other organisms in this world, the Rambam says, don't forget it's part of a whole nefesh.
Ve'ata yodea shetikun amidot omnam uripui ha-nefesh v'chochotea.
And you know, the Rambam says, that when a person fixes and sets up his traits in the proper fashion, that is the way that one heals the nefesh and the different strengths that the nefesh has.
Uchmo sha'arofe,
and just as a doctor, asher yirapea gufot, who heals the physical, he heals people.
צריך שידע תחילה הגוף אשר ירפאו בכללו.
He has to first learn anatomy. He has to know the body he's coming to heal. He has to know the body well.
וחלקי הגוף מהם?
And what are the different parts of the different components of a human body? So a doctor has to study anatomy. He has to know what he's healing. Thank you. Before he comes to heal.
רצוני לומר,
what I mean to say, the Rambam says, גוף האדם, he has to know the human body, וצריך שידע אילו דברים יחלו, he has to know what things make a person sick, וירוחק מהם, and he should distance himself from them, ואילו דברים יבריאו, ויכוון עליהם,
and a doctor has to know what makes a person healthy, and guide him to that.
So just as a doctor who's healing the physical has to know the human body well, to know how to cure it, כן אשר ירפא הנפש, so too one who wants to heal the human nefesh, וירצה לתקן המידות, and he wants to fix the traits, צריך שידע נפש האדם בכללה ובחלקיה. He has to know the human nefesh, be it in general, or the different components of the human nefesh. ומה יחלה אותה, what makes the human nefesh ill, ומה יבריאה, and what cures it. So the Rambam says we're going to first study the human nefesh, because in order to understand how to deal with the human nefesh and to become better people, we first have to understand what the human nefesh is composed of. What is the human nefesh?
ומפני זה אומר, and therefore I want to say, the Rambam says, שחלקי הנפש חמישה.
There are five different sections to the human nefesh. הזן, the one that feeds, the one that gets nutrition. והמרגיש, and the one that feels, sensate, touch. והמדמה, the one that imagines. והמתעורר, the one that gets aroused, the one that gets stimulated. והשכלי, and the one that thinks, the one that has intelligence. The five different segments of the nefesh. So the nefesh is composed of a section that gets nutrition, that feels, that imagines, that gets aroused, that thinks. וכבר הקדמנו בזה הפרק שדברים אינם אלא, שדברינו אינם אלא בנפש האדם. And we've already introduced in this chapter that what we're discussing is only relevant to the human nefesh. כי כוח המזון על דרך משל אשר לאדם, איננו כוח המזון אשר לחמור ולסוס. The human ability and need to have to eat, to get nutrition, is not equal to the animal's need to get nutrition. כי האדם ניזון בחלק הזן מן הנפש האנושית. Because the human, when he's eating, is feeding a human being who has a component that needs to be fed. והחמור ניזון בחלק הזן מן הנפש החמורית. And when a donkey eats, so then he's feeding a donkey which has a component that needs to be fed. But you're not going to say that because they both have components that need to be fed, those components are the same. והדקל ניזון בחלק הזן מן הנפש אשר לא. And here we see the Rambam speaks about plants. He says the dekel, the palm tree, also gets sustenance with the part of its nefesh that needs to be sustained. ואומנם יאמר הכל אלו האישים ניזון. Even though when we refer to all of these, we say, it gets fed. Are you feeding your fish? Are you feeding your dog? Are you feeding your mom? Yeah, we use the same term. But are you feeding your baby? We use the same term, but it's not the same thing. בשיתוף השם בלבד, we only use the same term. לא שעניין אחד בינו, not that we mean to say that it's the same concept. וכן יאמר על איש האדם ובעל החיים מרגיש. By the same token, when we speak about man, we say he feels. בשיתוף השם בלבד. When we say that animals feel, we don't mean that's the same thing as humans. We're just using the same term. לא שהרגשה אשר ברובני, הרגשה אשר בזה הסוס. We don't mean to say that Reuven feels like the horse feels. It's not the same thing. Nor do we say that different species feel the same way. Every species that has a nefesh, yesho nefesh achat, zulat nefesh acher. Every species has its own nefesh, which is separate and totally different than the nefesh of other species. Notice what the Rambam's doing. He's reiterating the point and expounding and clarifying the point. But where's the Rambam headed? Today there's a drive to ensure animal rights. And in Judaism we also are concerned with animal rights. But Judaism tells us, what are those rights? You don't pain an animal for nothing. You don't waste an animal. You don't put a load on an animal that's beyond what that animal could carry. We have limitations, but you are allowed to eat an animal. When you eat that animal, so the Torah says, you can't slash off a piece of meat and eat it. You have to give the animal, you have to let it die, whichever death the Torah tells us to administer, and then you can eat from the animal. You're not allowed to use a knife with a serrated edge. You have to use a thin knife. A knife that's very, very clean, that has nothing in it that'll, no little blemish. And some understandings explain this, that this the idea over here is to minimize the pain. We don't know why the Torah says it, but that is one understanding. But we still eat the animals. We still eat celery. So how do you define what's the difference between human life and vegetation's life, the difference between human life and animal's life? So many vegetarians, that's why they're vegetarians. They say, what, just because you're stronger than the animals, you're eating animals? So if animals ever get the upper hand, you think it's okay that they should eat humans? Why not? What's the difference? So the Rambam is telling us what the difference is. That the difference is that there's nothing in common. It's not what's the difference. What is there in common? The Rambam is saying that even what we visualize as having in common with animals, we do not have in common with animals. We describe it as being similar. I might masticate. I'll chew my food. But when I eat, I'm not eating like the dog eats. It's a totally different function of eating. Why, says the Rambam? Because we view the human as a whole. And even though that whole has components that seem similar to the components of the nefesh of an animal or of a plant, they are not similar. They may seem similar, but because they come from a different source, they are not. What is the Rambam doing? The Rambam is saying the focal point of definition is the whole. You could break things down. You could say, I'm composed of atoms, and that's composed of atoms, so then you can't eat anything. What makes me different than an animal? What makes me different than a plant? What makes me different than a rock? The fact that I could walk, so maybe that's just survival of the fittest. I have an advantage over rocks. If one day they could hear rocks talking, so you won't be able to step on rocks, so you can't walk. So today they're listening to whales speak, and today they're looking at plants, and they're saying plants emit different things, and they sense different things. And animals also are trying to figure out what do animals understand, what don't they understand, what do they feel, what don't they feel. But at the end of the day, the Rambam is saying there's nothing that we have equal with the animals. It seems similar, but it's not the same thing. You okay? Yeah? No? Okay. Guys sometimes look at me like I'm off the wall. So I'm just... No, you could say you don't understand, or maybe you think, what about X or Y? I am. The wall's here and I'm off it.
I still think, let's say, within that concept, there are good reasons for vegetarianism.
Okay. I'm listening.
No, I'm just saying, let's say, if you have like these levels of creation, like if there are like stone and stuff, vegetation, animals, human being, and the Jew. So let's say if someone decides to be a vegetarian, that doesn't necessarily mean that he disagrees with eating meat at all. It just might that, so because I'm a vegetarian, I say that. But it might just be, let's say, that he thinks, you know, that there is no necessity for this, you know, because if you see that you could get along with plants and they're even on a lower level than animals, and you see like that it's like sufficient for them, so like, I think it's a convenient
argument. But you're destroying the plants. Plants live.
They live, but still there are these levels, you know, let's say creation that you have all this stuff like stones and everything.
And then let's
the level of vegetarian sets should be okay, but the level of carnivorous sets is not okay?
No, that's not the point. I'm just saying, you know, if you decide, let's say, to receive your nourishment from a lower level, it's just a point of view, because if you see, you know, I have to consume something that is alive, you know, mm-hmm. but it might be that I just consume something that is of life with less value, let's put it like this, you know, because you don't see a necessity for, let's say, consuming animals for yourself, you know. So.
Okay. I hear.
How?
I didn't follow what you were saying.
The
Nazir. Yeah.
Nazir.
What about him? I didn't follow. He gets an you're saying
it's not a rub for him not to drink the wine, so isn't it's not a rub not to eat the meat.
No,
that's a nice
like
thought.
There was a rabbi, I forgot the name of the Gemara. He would save up enough money to eat every single fruit every year in order not to. You probably remember that.
The Gemara says, yeah, the Yerushalmi says that he said that a person, atid adam nitenet adin, a person is still going to pay the price for every new fruit that he saw and didn't enjoy. So that's what he's pointing out. That if the Gemara says that for every fruit a person is going to pay a price, you're supposed to enjoy, God created it so you enjoy it in a holy fashion, but enjoy it nonetheless. So then Adam is saying, I think it is a correct thought, that the same thing might be true for animals as well. Just like the Nazir, a person who abstains from drinking wine, even though he's considered holy, he does have to bring a sacrifice for having avoided wine for such a long period. We don't consider it a positive thing. We say sometimes in the situations he's in, that's what he has to do.
Is it not supposed to have it during Pesach? No, I guess.
Yeah, what can he do? So I'll have to figure something else out. Maybe he'll do it over bread or something else. But back to our topic.
Wait, bread on Pesach?
Good point. what's the matzah called in the Torah? Lechem oni, poor man's bread, right?
Right, but that's not what I don't think that's what you're referring to.
No, it's not what I was referring to. You're right. Got me there. Okay. The Rambam is continuing that just because we use similar terms for man and animal doesn't mean that they're the same thing. And each species has a different nefesh, and therefore their actions are defined as different. V'itchayvu minefesh ze pu'ulot u'minefesh ze pu'ulot. And each species, their nefesh requires them to do different actions. V'efshar shetidmeh pu'ula lifu'la. And sometimes the actions are similar. V'yechashev b'shteh pu'ulot shen davar chad beino. And the person who views it will think, gee, that's the same thing. I eat just like a zebra eats. V'en ha'davar ken, that's not so. U'mshalom mishal shlosham komot chashuchin. And a good mashal, the Rambam says, is, for example, if you look at three different places that are dark. Echad mehem zachah shem alav ha'shemesh ve'ir. One place, the sun shines, and suddenly you have light. V'asheni ala alav ha'yareach ve'ir. In the second place, the moon shines over it, and there you have light. V'ha'acher, and the last place, hudlak bo ner ve'ir. Someone lit a candle, and that's why you had light. Hinei kol echad mehem kvar nimtza ba'or. Each one of them has light. Aval sibat zeor ufualo, ha'shemesh. But in one place, the reason why you have light, what's causing it is the sun. Ufuela acher, and in the other place, what's causing the light? Ha'yarech, the moon. Ufuela acher, and in the third place, where are you getting your light from? Ha'esh, from the fire. Ken poel argashat ha'adam u'nefesh ha'adam. So too, the fact that man feels stems from his nefesh, his human nefesh. So you say, yeah, but he's feeling. Yeah, it's like, you're comparing the light from the sun to the light from a candle. So too, the human, when he feels, what's causing him to feel is the nefesh, the human nefesh. Ufuel argashat hachamo, nefesh hachamo. And what causes the donkey to feel is the donkey nefesh. Ufuel argashat hanesher, nefesh hanesher. And what causes an eagle to feel is the eagle's nefesh. Ve'en lehem inyan yekabetzem, and they have nothing in common that'll put them together, ela shituf Hashem milvad. The only thing that they have in common is that we use the same term to describe their feeling. The Rambam says, understand this, because this is a great concept. Many of the philosophers stumble on this point. And because they don't understand this point, these philosophers end up with improper thoughts, and they say things that are a disgrace. Now, the Rambam added a point in this last segment. We said that when a human feels and an animal feels, it's not the same feeling. And the Rambam quantified that. The Rambam said that we say it's not the same feeling because it stems from a different nefesh. But does that mean that if you prick a human and you prick an animal, they won't feel the same thing? No, they might feel the same thing. It might be that in essence, the stimuli that go from the needle to the brain, etc., what we call feeling, is the same between an animal and a human. The Rambam says what he meant to say is like, if you're in a dark room, you're not going to say that you don't have light because the light is from a candle or the light is from the sun. But you aren't going to say it's the same light because the source of the light is different. So too, the Rambam says the source of feeling in human as opposed to an animal, is different, and that's why the Rambam is saying it's eternally different. So we've limited it a little bit. Is anyone with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we going to continue or stop here? Let's take a vote. How many guys want to continue this? The other option is either Parsha or Mishle or Tehillim. We'll get to that. Okay. So let's continue. Vashuvir kavanatenu b'chirkei ha'nefesh. The Rambam says, I'll return to what my point was regarding the different segments of the nefesh. V'omar and I'll say, achelek hazan, The section of the nefesh. Remember, the Rambam divided the nefesh into five segments. There's the part that's zan, that gets nutrients, that gets fed, the margish, the one that feels, etc. So now, the Rambam is going to define each one. And again, this is relevant because what are we going to do in Pirkei Avot? We're going to try to take the physical and modify it to fit with the spiritual. So the Rambam is saying the physical really stems from a spiritual nefesh. And that's another underlying point that we really just read in the Rambam. You ask a person, how do you see? He says, I see with my eye. What do you mean? Your eye doesn't see? Put an eye on the table. It won't see anything. Oh, you're right. I see with my brain. What do you mean the brain doesn't see? Take a dead person. Open up his eyes. He has the eye, he has the brain, he doesn't see anything. So you don't know that. Maybe the dead person does see something. But as far as we know, he doesn't see. So how does the person see? So the Rambam over here, in this last paragraph, by explaining that the difference between the animal and the human is what is the source of these actions, the Rambam has taken as a given that the source for our actions, for the physical things we do, our senses, the source for that is the spiritual. Life is our nefesh. And what sees is really the nefesh. So who's doing the talking right now? You see my mouth talking, you see my face moving, but it's my nefesh that's talking. Who's doing the listening? It's your nefesh. It uses the physical to hear. It uses the ear, it uses the brain. That's all physical. What's doing the actual talking and the listening? It's the nefesh. So if you think about that, that's like a little genie that's stuck in this big body, and here you have a physical body doing everything, and the body is a servant, so to speak, or should be a servant, to the nefesh. Right? Who pulls whom? That's the eternal question. People are driven by their physical. And their nefesh is always yelling, hey, what you doing that for? Don't do that, don't do that. We all have a little voice inside of us. Not Jiminy Cricket on the outside, but rather deep down inside, we have that nefesh, which is really what life is. But that nefesh is yelling from inside us. The Gra understands that the whole book of Yonah, the whole book of Jonah, is Yonah isn't a person. Yonah is a dove. And that dove is an analogy for the soul. And when the prophet describes how Yonah goes down to the sea, he's describing how the soul has to come down to this physical world, into a physical body, and put up with all the different things that we have to put up with in this world. And that dove is always dying to come back up, to get out of there. And the girl goes through all of the book of Yonah, describing how Yonah, we're accustomed to that being the prophet, Yonah ben Amittai. The Gra says in the whole book of Jonah, the word Jonah or Yonah is referring to the dove, which is referring to the soul that has to come down to this world. So the Rambam over here also pointed out that it's the soul that is behind everything physical that we're doing. A point aside, let's get a little confused. You guys with me?
Yeah.
We stand in prayer in the morning and we say, Elokai, my God, Neshama, the Neshama, Shenatata bi, you put in me. Who's talking?
You're talking about the soul is related.
Who's doing the talking?
The
soul is doing the talking. Or the physical doing the talking. Because we're saying the Neshama is in me. So who's the me that the Neshama is in it?
It can't ever be the body that's speaking. Never. Because the body can't speak.
Well, if the Neshama is talking, then how come the Neshama is saying, God, the Neshama you put in me. You could just say, God, hi, I'm the Neshama. I want to say, that's not what we're saying. So, you want to answer that or believe that as a point to ponder?
I think that there's no animation without Neshama. The body ceases to cognate without Neshama. And the Neshama is the spark that animates us. And so without that, there's no possibility for anything to function in us. So I think Neshama is looking in the mirror and saying, thank you for the reflection of myself and blah, blah, blah.
So then, let's think of something easier. We wake up and we say, Mode ani, I thank. Who's talking? Shechazalta bi nishmati, you put my neshama back in me.
That's when we're talking.
So who's doing the talking? Is the neshama talking?
Because we're thanking Hashem for giving us back our neshama.
For putting this neshama.
The way the wording's working, it's coming from the physical being, and
right.
It's not coming from
the neshama. That's right.
It's very right. And in that case, maybe back anything that doesn't have anything to do. I mean, because the next things after that is like getting ready to learn Torah and everything, and that probably is connected to the spiritual with your soul. Opposed to the one thing where you're thanking God for bringing it back, it might be also, you might think it's also like a part of your soul and maybe your physical body, like your soul is like, hey, I'm back, and you're like, your body's like, okay, good, now I can thank God for it. It's something like that. Because if it didn't come back to you, you'd be up in hopefully heaven talking to Hashem, to going through everything.
I don't even separate the two. I think we're kippah.
But they are separated. You're separated every night from it.
You can't do the body can't do it because it's kippah. It's just a husk. The shama comes down and fills us with our life. So while we can cognitively think of ourselves as two beings, the body has no power over the shama, and the shama rules over the body.
Well, you agree that the body could pull the neshama down, the body could do avirot, the body could sin.
But the neshama returns to the body because it has more to do. And maybe there is a pulling because the neshama chooses to have that connection.
You could also look at the other way, though, where the neshama feels like, I can't get anything out of this person.
Let's
how am I going back down?
What does he say about it?
Frankenthal, why don't you even like...
One second, Avshalom wanted to say something.
I read the other week, you can spell it like poor pay. But you should speak light with your mouth. So the whole idea about the speech also, the first thing Hashem said, it's like your speech should heal already people. So you're busy with soul work and all that. That's probably the connection. You should, in your speech, you should create positive energy or something.
But I didn't follow. So
the positive energy, I think it's. I don't think you do it really with your body, but you use your body to reach a higher level of your of another person's soul. Even you reach somebody by his words and not by eating. That's more or less. It's possible. You should meet somebody with words.
If you can
connect with someone with the words still.
Yeah, but still, you're going to have to do something which is your neshama.
Physical.
It's life. Let's think of something else. The Torah tells us that we have a mitzvah to do certain things. We have a mitzvah to take an esrog and shake it. Esrog, lulav, you take a bunch of branches, put them all together, start shaking them, that's a mitzvah. Used to learn in Chinatown, the Chinese once asked me, there was a guy I used to buy fruits, but he said, I can get really big lemons. I see you guys pay $50 for a lemon. Tell me, I can. How do I get those really big lemons? Well, think about it. It's true. So we're taking a citron. It's not really a lemon. But what makes this a mitzvah? Why is it that we say that taking this, so to speak, it's not a lemon, it's a citron. Why is this a mitzvah? And if you take a lemon, it's not a mitzvah. Why is it that when you take branches a day before Sukkot, you start waving them around, you don't make a blessing over that, and on Sukkot you do? So the same physical, the same plant, when it's at a certain time, we say shaking it is going to have a spiritual effect. It's going to be a mitzvah. So what are we saying about that? We're saying that this physical, this plant, it's not going to talk to me, but it can connect with the spiritual. It can become a mitzvah. Now let's take a human body. Let's take a person. Person, when they're a baby, very much like an animal. They cry. What do? They eat. They do their bodily needs. They sleep. That's it.
Crying.
Come 2-3 years old. So now they know how to do more. They know how to tear things apart. They know how to dig. They know how to get dirty. They know how to get the house dirty. They know how to get their clothes dirty. The Medrash says they're like a pig. The Medrash says man, as he evolves, is like different animals. And then what happens? He learns to talk, he learns to communicate, he starts understanding. And at this point, when a child reaches the age of 5, the question is, what's he going to do with his neshama or his nefesh? At that point, when he starts having understanding, he could take that physical body and the potential that that body was given, and he could do something with it. But when he does it, so it's like you look at the Energizer Bunny. It's going around banging, right? What's doing the banging? So you could say the battery's doing the banging. What's doing the banging? The hammer, the
arm and the hammer.
The hammer is doing the banging.
But
what's the power that's allowing it to do the banging?
The battery.
So it's the battery.
Which is the soul.
But it's a combination. The battery, if it would lie on the table, couldn't do the banging. When the battery is in the Energizer Bunny, so it can do the banging. When a person has a neshama within him, when a person has the nefesh that the Rambam is talking about, so then a person is going to do all the physical things the Rambam listed. He's going to feel, and the horse feels also. He's going to eat, and the horse also eats. Every animal eats. But the question is, where does that strength come from? And the Rambam says the human nefesh is nothing like, it's a totally different battery, it's totally different than the horses. But when he eats, what's doing the eating? It's a combination of both. So Hashem tells us what we discussed last night. Hashem says, "Hashemaim, Shemaim, Hashem, v'atz natan livnei Adam." That's not yours. You make a blessing, then God says, the other way around. The verse begins by saying that, I don't remember the pasuk. The pasuk says that all of the land is Hashem's. And then Hashem says, I'll give you the land. When does God give us the land? When we apply spirituality to it. When we make a blessing, when we take that physical and we uplift it, then we're allowed to have access to it. So now when I have this body, true, God gave me potential, I could talk. The fact that I could talk was given to me with something spiritual. I have a neshama. When I talk, it's a combination of the neshama and the physical. I couldn't talk without the neshama, and the neshama without the body couldn't talk, right? So the combination is doing the talking. And therefore that combination can sometimes speak, like Avshalom and Yaakov were trying to say. It can talk and say, hey, thanks for giving me that spiritual part that I could actually be doing this. It's true. The spiritual is what's allowing it to talk. But it's that combination that's doing the talking. It's saying, hey, God, thank you. For example, let's think of a set. Right? We have mathematicians here. We have a set. We have this whole group. So the whole group could call Yaakov's father and say, we as a group really appreciate you sent Yaakov here. So it's true. Yaakov is part of the group. But we could still say that we as a group appreciate it. So it's true. We sort of gloss over the fact that he's part of the group as well. So I know you don't like that, David. I know. And maybe a different time we have to discuss. Maybe there are other understandings of this concept. Why is it that we say, Elokai Neshamash Natata Bi? We'll just open up another train of thought. We discussed philosophically that everything stems from the neshama, and then we went to a stage where we discussed that everything is a combination of the neshama and the physical. But now let's go to the other extreme. Maybe everything is the physical. It's true. You could only do it because you have a neshama. But that, maybe, we could say that's like saying. We'll give an example from the Midrash. The Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu killed a Mitzri, he killed an Egyptian, and he had to run to Midian. He comes to Midian, he sees the daughter of Yisro, the daughters of Jethro, the different shepherds are trying to mess with them, and he comes in and he saves them. And then they come home and they tell their father, an Egyptian saved us from the hands of the shepherds. He asks them, how'd you get home so fast? And he says, there's an Egyptian, he helped us out. So the Medrash says, what does it mean? What did they mean when they said an Egyptian helped us out? The Medrash quotes the following story. A guy was bitten by an arod, and we discussed last week or 2 weeks ago that the Medrash says an arod is a snake, that when it bites a person, there's a race. Who gets to the waters first? the person or the snake. If the person gets to the to a source of water first, the snake drops dead. And if the snake gets to a source of water first, the person drops dead, right? So we discussed that this snake shows up in Midrashim a lot. So the Midrash says it's comparable to the following story. A guy gets bitten by an ahod. So now he starts running, and the snake is running. They're both running to the jagged cliff. There's a cliff. He dives into the water. And as he's diving in, there's a baby there drowning. And he gets to the water first. The ahod drops dead. And right there's the baby. Picks up the baby, and he takes it out of the water. And the mother's standing there, and she's so thankful. She says, "Thank you, you saved my baby." And he says, "Don't thank me. Thank the ahod. It's all because of that snake that I ran here and I jumped in." So the Medrash says that's what happened with Moshe and Yisro's daughters. Moshe came and he saved them. They wanted to thank him. So he said, "Don't thank me, thank the Egyptian. Ish mitzri, it's the Egyptian who saved you. It's because I got into trouble for killing that Egyptian. That's why I ended up having to run out here to Midian, and that's why I saved you girls." So they come back home to their father and they say, "An Egyptian saved us from the waters, from the shepherds." So you guys are all laughing, right? It seems a little far-fetched. That's like saying, "I didn't pick up the computer. My lunch picked up that computer." Yeah, it's true. I ate lunch, so I have strength, so I can pick up the computer. But you don't look at things that way. So the question is, what we did in the beginning of our discussion tonight was we divided the nefesh. Why? Because we're learning the Rambam, who's trying to analyze and define what the nefesh is and the different components are. But maybe we got so focused on this concept of the nefesh being a separate thing, a separate entity, that we made it like today's lunch. We made it like that Egyptian. That you go a whole long journey and you say, "I didn't save you, the Egyptian saved you. I didn't pick up the computer, my lunch picked up the computer." So let's just finish. So when we say the neshama you placed in me, it could be that there's an aspect where my ability to say that stems from the neshama. But we have to find if there is ever a place during prayer or in Tanakh that we speak about the neshama as being that separate entity. Or do we always speak to the person? Do we always speak to the physical? We divided it. We said here, and philosophically, we said it's two different things. This is the source. This is the strength. That's what the Rambam did for us. The question is, did we take it too far by asking the question? Because throughout Tanakh and throughout our prayer, we're going to have to search and see, is there any place where we go that far to divide it? Because you could also say, "It's not me, it's my mother. I wouldn't have life if not for my parents." So you could always go another right, another step back and go back to Hashem, etc.
You can say, "It's not me, it's Adam. It's Adam.
Yeah, you could keep going back. So the question is, over here it's a little different because you're not going back. You're saying at the very minute that you speak, that's what's giving you the power to speak. That's the life that's within us. But on the other hand, maybe it is going too far. So these are just, we said, we'll open it up. These are points to think about when you pray, when you learn. Just a thought. Now, we will stop and go over to either Parsha or...